Welcome to Rooster Radio, a broadcast dedicated to supporting and promoting local artists in the Gaston County and surrounding areas.
All right, so let's kick it off. We are with three-fifths of y'aller. Say hey to the fans or to the
everybody.
Viewers.
Hey.
Introduce yourself and what it is you do in the band.
I'm Jason, and I only play guitar.
Whoa! I'm Galaxy. I only sing.
I'm Kim, and I only play drums and sing backup.
Yeah, you do two things.
You play ukulele on one song.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
Mm. I play ukulele on one song.
Yeah, it's funny because every single person on that couch plays multiple instruments. Everyone has other projects going on, and let's start there. Let's start with how y'all came to be, because all of you have all kinds of stuff out there with different projects. Whose brainchild is this, and how'd you get it going?
So New Year's of not this New Year's, but the New Year's before.
So going into 23.
Going into 23. We've always wanted to start
going
a punk band.
Going
into 22. Yeah, going into...
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about?
We just wrapped up 23. So...
It was going into 23.
Going in... Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Right? We got to get this part right.
New Year's Eve, 22.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Right. Yes. So...
Math.
Yes. We had done a little punk project years before and played like one real show and like an open mic, and we just weren't really ready for it. And we've been playing with the Dancing Fleas for over 10 years now, and you specifically have super grown as an instrumentalist, just picking up
Thanks.
A bajillion instruments. You know, I've gotten real good at ukulele, but you've just picked up everything and added it to the Fleas in a way that I think has made you a really well-rounded musician.
Yeah, thank you.
And Marcos, who does all the booking at Barley's in Spindale, was talking to us one day and just said, "You guys have a punk band, right?" I think we just said, "Yes."
that's how we do.
That's our attitude in a lot of directions. We said yes, and he said, "Do you want to play a punk showcase on New Year's Eve?" And we said yes. And this was probably like September roundabouts.
Right, probably.
And so we were like, "All right, let's put together a band and try to work up a set for this show and not let anybody know that we didn't already have it." And we had already been scouting Kim a little bit.
How did you know Kim? Or did you know Kim before this?
I saw her play at Recycle, and people told me, "Hey, you got to go check out Kim's show." And I was like, "Okay, Kim," you know, and I checked out the show, and it was great. Oh. I really enjoyed the show a lot, and talked to her after the show and told her that we were going to be friends. And because that stuff worked in kindergarten.
Why don't adults do that?
Right. I was just like, "We're going to be friends." And she said, "Okay." Like, that's how it works. And we went and then we played like dodgeball. It was fun.
Oh my gosh.
Let's be friends. Let me murder you with a rubber ball.
Oh my gosh.
But. So
now hold on. Yeah. Kim's quite accomplished as a musician. So how did you reel her into this project? I have a feeling I know the answer to this, but I'm going to let you tell it.
Well, Galaxy did most of the reeling. I would just say I had a small part in this because Galaxy was talking to her about like doing this band with us, and I said, "Kim, let's stop talking. Let's start making plans." And she said, "Did you just quote my own song at me?" and I had her at that point.
Nice.
Score.
He did.
Yeah, I mean, Kim's project, she typically plays guitar, but once mm-hmm. we found out she played drums, we were like, hey, we need a drummer. And we're also looking for a bassist. And Kim was like, well, my husband is a bassist. We were like, score. Yes.
Two for one.
Two for one deal. Yeah. Now, Kim, what were you doing at the time? Like, were you just doing your solo stuff at the moment? Or
as far as music, yeah. Yeah, I had not played drums since moving back from Atlanta. The last time I had played my drum kit was in 2019 in Atlanta.
Okay, so you're 3 years removed from playing drums or anything. Uh-huh. Did you just sit down and just go at it with them, or did you do a little practicing to work up to it? Like, how did that work?
No, we got together and played through some stuff. It's like riding a bike. It's like, you know, if you haven't ridden a bike in a while, you might not be able to get on and ride for 10 miles, you know, but I mean, yeah, I was actually kind of surprised because I was wondering like, well, God, I haven't played in like 3 years. But I feel like I'm a better drummer now. And I think breaks can be really helpful. I think I appreciate it a lot more now after not doing it for a few years.
Right. Yeah. Now, you've got 3 months to write songs for a set. Did y'all say, screw it, we're just going to do some covers? Or were you like, no, we're going to make some original music for the show?
We performed with many covers and one original that night. Okay. We probably already had some stuff in the works for more, but we had one confident original. And a lot of our covers were picked from that initial meeting where we said, all right, we're going to get together and play some songs. What songs do we want to play? So everybody kind of pitched a cover that they would like to play. And we figured that way we would kind of find our sound by, you know, we all like alternative music, but different spheres of that. So we said, all right, everybody's going to bring a song. That way we learn what everybody likes. We learn what we're good at. We can kind of find our sound, and then we'll start writing from there, which I think was a really good way mm-hmm. to get started.
Yeah, what's really fun about you guys is yes, you are a punk band in the traditional sense of the word, but there's a little bit of, like, I mean, 90s alternative vibe going there. I mean, yeah. You can hear all the different influence in your music, because it's like, you know, punk is punk, right? It's not, you know, I don't want to say this, I don't want to rub anyone the wrong way by saying it. It's not hard to do punk music, right? It's
right.
But yeah. To do it original is really hard, because so much punk music follows that same, you know, beat signature.
Right.
And what you guys do is fresh, but it sounds old school. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It does give me that feeling of being a teenager in the 90s discovering
new
music. Yeah,
because it's not just the punk. It's a little bit alternative. And then there's that little dash of ska that's just thrown in there. That was why I was like,
yeah, who's the reggae
fan?
Y'all.
I love that.
Well, I mean, definitely Galaxy and I are into old school reggae.
Zach is on tour with a ska band right now. So he's in Florida playing with a ska band. And I mean, horns, he plays mostly jazz, but he definitely can turn on that side of things a little bit. But what I love is that every time someone hears us, they find a little bit of something different in what we play. You know, whether we get everything from, some people say that we are strictly 79 to 89. And some people say that we're going into the 90s, and then some people are like, oh, no, it's like 2000s alternative. I think that our album that we're cutting now has a little bit of 2000s just in the way that we recorded it, which is interesting because I don't know that we capture that as much live. But I love that. I love that everybody, they're like, they can't put us in a box. And so our box is like actually huge, you know, with a lot of different things piecing
it
together.
It's a hexagon.
Yeah.
It's a box, it's a hexagon.
And we're not trying to be one thing, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's like I said, it's fresh. It's the reason
right?
The reason I reference the 90s is because I equate 90s with like this explosion of creativity mm-hmm. that just didn't exist before.
Yeah.
You know, so many Yeah, and I mean, you can make the argument that it was all derivative because, like, it's taken this style, and bam, now we've got something new. But I do kind of feel like that, at least in my lifetime, it was like the biggest explosion of creativity. So it's, to me, that when you see that now, it's fresh again. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To see something different. And let's make no mistake, your live shows are amazing. The energy you guys have on stage, Kim back there banging away, you know, singing. You know, she's got this move when she goes to hit the mic. It's kind of fun to watch. You're just so much fun to watch live, which, you know, you can say the same thing about the Dancing Fleas. You know, really, really fun live show. And it's very, very clear that you're having the time of your life up there. And that's so infectious. Yeah. So infectious.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Speaking of, you can catch them right here at the Rooster on February 8th with the Ruftons.
Yes.
And Caught Off Guard. We're really looking forward to that show. That's going to be a really, really fun show. Fun night of punk rock.
Yes. We'll have some limited edition merch, so you don't want to miss that show, because we will have a Yaller Ruftin collab of merch that you will only be able to get that night. So if you want it, you better come get it. And once it's gone, it's gone. We're not reprinting them.
Do you make any big boy sizes?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good.
I mean, because we've been waiting on that merch since the last time y'all played here.
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah, we did give them a bit of a hard time last time we were here for not having any our sizes.
Merch. We got you. We're going to reprint some shirts our first run. We're trying to, like, run out of them. We have some other stuff in the works, but this specific show will be some new stuff, some limited edition stuff. You'll want to come out and get it, because once it's gone, it's gone.
Nice. So let me dig a little bit with you guys. Being a father-daughter duo, you're in two different bands together. I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that Galaxy, your house was just full of music growing up. At what point did y'all come to a realization that y'all should, like, work together, play together? Like, how did that get going?
The ukulele store. Yeah. So we were in Shelby Music, I think, to get stuff for me for orchestra.
I think so.
I played violin in middle school and high school, but nothing impressive. and we were there probably to get, like, rosin or a bow or something, and they had these real cute ukuleles on display that were, like, cheap Kala ukuleles in bright colors. And there's a little sign next to it that said, Shelby Ukulele Club, first meeting next week. And I turned to him and said, we're the type of people that would be in a ukulele club.
You know, when your 15-year-old daughter looks at you and says, Dad, we're the kind of people who would be in a ukulele club. There's, like, only one response to that. And you go, yes. So I bought two ukuleles and we went to the club.
And at the time, were you just a guitar player? Like, what were you doing at the time?
I mean, I owned a guitar. I could make some basic open chords. That was it. I played flute in middle school, junior high. I tried to play bass in high school, but never took a lesson, never played with a band, just had a bass till I cranked the amp up too loud and cracked the speaker cone, and then I didn't have a bass anymore. So that was my entire music experience. I had not really ever played instruments.
Growing up, we listened to a lot of different music, and we always had, like, music knowledge in my house. We had a running point system for if you knew, like, really niche facts about certain bands, you know? He would play a song and be like, what's this band and what's this album for 1,000 cool points, you know? but it's interesting because that, like, pre-15 part of my life, you were a music lover, but I would not have categorized either of us as musicians.
Right.
And then from 15 on, that's, like, our whole thing.
Right.
Which is, it's been a rapid change, and all started with buying ukuleles that day.
And you guys have, like, learned or become musicians together. That's super tight. Like,
it really is. It really is.
That's so touching. Like, I can't get my daughter to give a shit about anything I'm into. So.
I mean, that age, that 13, yeah, that's, but mine, we got them a violin because they wanted to play violin. I was like, okay. And then it was just kind of, that hyperfixation was over for the moment. And then it was like a few months ago, hey, I still want to take violin lessons. I'm like, all right.
The fact that you guys dove right in. So you go to the ukulele club. Like, is there an expectation? Like, what are you thinking going into this?
We think we're going to have so much fun.
Yeah.
So you're just looking to have a good time.
We have ukuleles, and ukuleles are fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just thought it would be fun.
We'd learned how to tune them, and we knew how to make a C chord.
Yeah. Yeah, we knew. We had done some YouTube preparation, but I did know I took, like, probably 6 guitar lessons in middle school before I moved on from that interest. And we knew that the guy that was running the club was my guitar teacher.
Okay.
So I knew that he would be nurturing in that, and that he'd be open to beginners. And that club is now the Dancing Fleas.
Oh.
Okay.
The original
origin
members,
story.
There's only a couple members left over from three. Yeah, it's you, me, and Laura.
Yeah.
And other people have come and gone, and some of those people still will come back to our shows or come and jam with us and stuff. But that, you know, like, Laura was at that meeting, and the three of us have stuck with it all these years. Stan came and sat in because his son was in the group. And so Mayor Anthony, the first time I ever met him, he was playing guitar with us, just jamming at Shelby Ukulele Club. And I played a ukulele song about going to the beach and smoking pot. And I was 15. I didn't know anything. It's a good song. And we get in the car, and Dad just busts out laughing. He goes, "You just played a song about smoking pot with the mayor." I was like, "That was the mayor? Oh my God." But yeah, here we are, like, from Shelby Ukulele Club, like, yeah, over, you know, 11, 12 years since that first initial meeting.
But, you know, as you know, there's, like, nothing like being on stage or performing to really push you to hone your craft. So, like, playing with the club was fine, but when we did our first live performance, you know, and then I just felt like I felt all the things that clicked and all the things that didn't, like the things I knew what I needed to work on, the places I felt uncomfortable. And some of us were like, oh, this is what we want to do. This is awesome. Let's do more of this. And that's sort of how the club split off with the Dancing Fleas, those of us who wanted to just keep performing more. And then we've just been sort of aggressively performing. And we've played so many, we've played lots of incredible places. And we even, Galaxy and I even went to England as we were invited to become a part of a super group. We played the Tate Gallery in England.
Wow.
In 2019. It was an amazing experience. And learning that and having that much fun on stage, I just started wanting to play instruments because just learning that instrument was so much fun. And now that I had a little feel for it, I started picking up other things, but really looking for a chance to play guitar and kind of play loud stuff and the music that I loved coming up. And I lived in Chapel Hill from 90 to 94, which, talk about, you know, if the 90s were a time of musical creativity, if you could just put a pin in the map in the 3 or 4 places in the world where that was happening the most, one of those places would have been Chapel Hill, 90 to 94.
Yeah.
And I was a radio DJ then, and at a very challenging radio station where not only could I not play the same band in a 3-hour, 4-hour block, of course, I couldn't play the same genre in a 2-hour block. Couldn't play the same band 2 weeks in a row. I mean, I was being constantly pushed to discover new music and explore and expand. And it was it was such the right push for someone who loves to learn things. And I found the same kind of thing in music as well. And playing with y'all has been awesome. Terms of as a learning experience. Yeah.
Now, Kim, what about you? How'd you get your start in the music? You can sing, you can play guitar. What else do you do? What else can you play?
I mean, that's really it. Drums was my first instrument. I picked that up when I was 12, like playing in the band at school. Right?
Okay, so you were in school band.
Yeah, yeah.
And were you a percussionist then?
I was, yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And then I got my first kit when I was 16. And I learned to play from playing playing along with songs, but mainly my favorite was Bon Jovi, "Born to Be My Baby." He's a good drummer.
Is that a great
baby
riff?
Reference?
I know, baby reference.
I was gonna ask you, like, who were your influences growing up, and you just went ahead and dated yourself.
Chico Torres back then, yeah. And I mean that was late '80s. So that was, I had never heard of anything at that point that wasn't on, like, mainstream radio.
Right.
I did not even know that there was, like, another existence of music that wasn't just, like, on the radio.
Like college radio, you mean? Like, or underground?
I didn't know. I was completely unaware of any of that. Loved music, but it was very just limited to, you know, top 40.
I think
stuff.
A lot of us had that experience.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
when
I mean,
you're a kid, maybe.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's definitely, like, a thing that, like, our generation does not share with today's generation.
Right. Like, well, yeah, I guess it's because, you know, a lot of that's because of the 90s, because alternative became mainstream.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, anyway, that was my first love, really, was playing drums. And after I got my kit, I just stuck with it. And then when I went to college at UNCW, that's when I started playing in bands. And that's when I met Mark and joined.
What made you pick up a guitar?
So, actually... other songwriters. So when I moved to Atlanta, I fell in with a couple of songwriters. I had always played kind of like noisy rock music on the drums, but just by chance, I met a couple of singer-songwriters and started playing with them in Atlanta. A guy, he's kind of got like a rotating collection of bandmates. He calls it Chickens and Pigs. A great writer. His name's Jeff Evans. I started playing with him, and then I started playing with a good friend of mine, Mary O. Harrison. And they were both just really great, like, lyricists, you know. And it was really the first time that I had played with people who, like, put stories to songs. And I was an English major, and I was really into just, like, storytelling. Mm-hmm. And I think they really just inspired me to try to do that myself. I was going through a divorce, basically, when I moved to Atlanta and was dealing with that. And I think I just had a lot of stuff to get out somehow.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And picked up a guitar at a flea market and just started writing and just really fell in love with it. So, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, it's one of the things, a flaw of mine, I have to admit, I'm so, like, envious of the ability that so many of you guys have to write song, like, lyrically, right? You know, like, you know, I've through the years, I've tried to kind of express myself that way, and then when you go back and read it, I'm like, this fucking sucks. Yeah, and I guess you could probably get past that if you just keep writing, and I assume that's probably what it is for you guys that makes your music better, is throwing that shit in the trash and starting over and keeping on at it. You know, a lot of creativity, like Galaxy came into open mic a few weeks ago and sang her song, her love for ukulele, and, you know, it was so, like, fun and full of love that I was, like, fighting tears, just, like, this is so cool.
I can't take credit. That's Amanda Palmer's ukulele.
Okay.
Anthem. I did play an original, but that one is not an original. It's just really fucking good.
Well, it's the point that I'm making is, like, the ability to just, you know, the power of words.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You almost cried. Yeah.
I was choked up. I was like, this is so good.
I get choked up at that song, too.
Yeah.
If I had been here that night, I probably would have been, too. Yeah, I would have actually been crying.
Me, too.
If he teared up, I probably would have been crying.
It's funny, as a grown man, the places you find yourself getting emotional, I'll get upset with my daughter for not keeping her room clean, and then she cries, and I'm like, no, fuck that. Like, I'm mad at you. But then I'm sitting there watching a movie, some stupid movie, and some emotion, like, the music starts welling up.
Yeah,
and
the
you're
music
like, what
and
is
everything
wrong with
hand
me?
In hand.
Why is this the thing that gets me?
Yeah.
Only, yeah. Writing songs, I mean, I'm sitting between two English majors, and so, I mean, that makes me, I get nervous definitely about my lyricism, and I have had to push myself. I think the big thing was the first song I wrote for the Dancing Fleas. There's still whole verses that make me cringe every time I perform it because I just don't think it's any good. But when I finished it, I pushed myself and I said, I need to finish this song and perform it or I'm never going to write another song. If I don't just bite the bullet and have it out there, then I'm not going to be able to ever write anything better than it either. So I think that it's super vulnerable to put your own words out there. And I think Kim is such a badass for doing it for so long because that's huge and it is a wonderful outlet.
It is. But one thing I've learned about myself, though, is I've used art for the outlet for so long. I mean, like, my mom still talks about how when I was a kid, like, just comparing me and my younger brother. If my younger brother came home, had a hard day at school, he instantly wanted to talk to my mom about it. If I came home, she could just kind of tell, and she'd be like, what's wrong? Nothing. I go in my room, and I, like, write poetry, or I make art, and it's a wonderful thing. There are so many worse things I could have done, you know, with, like, I mean, some people, they go to, like, alcohol or, you know, even, I don't know, like, really bad things because they've got all this stuff in that they don't know what to do with, right? But maybe because of just my schooling, because I'm in grad school to become a counselor, I've noticed about myself, I think I leaned on that for so long that, like, I didn't really, like, open up to people through just conversations. It's like, I can sing about it.
Have you always been a little standoffish in social situations?
Standoffish, I hope not, but maybe. I was really, really shy when I was a kid, you know? And so I only recently have kind of figured that out about myself. And it's what's funny is I don't write as many songs now that I just talk to people. I still love to write songs. And I did. I mean, I wrote a couple songs the other day. But in general.
I think that's the therapeutic aspect of art is I mean, I'm 100% for it. Like you said, there's so many worse things you could get addicted to let, you know, be a big part of your life. And I hear what you're saying, like, and it does sound like college brain talking when you talk about how, you know, getting your master's for counseling, like you're learning these skills, and now you're, you know, looking in the mirror at it. You know, but I just want to make sure that we don't discount just the power and how great it is to have art as an outlet
for a lot of people. No, not discounting it at all. Just it's just interesting for myself to look back and I don't know. I guess I just question it. It's like, wow, how did I get so comfortable revealing this stuff on stage to people that don't know me? But if I were just to talk about it to somebody, that I was so uncomfortable with that.
Well, I mean, it's a way to do it without, you know,
feel like you're being judged is what it is. Because they're like, oh, it's a song, not a conversation, which people can just easily openly judge you for.
Yeah, that's a much better way to say it. I was going to say without consequence, but that's actually more accurate. Like, if that outlet, it's empowering to be able to do that because you can just walk away when you're done. You don't have to explain yourself to anybody you know, after performing.
Like, oh, that's a sad song, but they don't necessarily think that's a sad person.
Right.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And again, not discounting it at all. It's just something kind of interesting that I've only come to realize about myself here recently. But it is, I mean, it's a wonderful gift to also, I love the idea of helping other people find that, like, means of expressing themselves through song or anything creative. Like, that's something I'm studying, you know.
I couldn't agree more. That's what we're all about here, is, you know, bringing people together. You know, we get to see it unfold almost on a weekly basis, you know, the twinkle in somebody's eye or the fire come back to somebody that hasn't done it in a while, and they come to open mic, and next thing you know, they started a new band. And it's you know, living in this world is so rewarding.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. You know, I've never been that talented at music, but being able to surround myself with creatives like this, it's really kind of, for me, it's kind of helped me work through, you know, some of the insecurities I have.
If it wasn't for writing songs and being able to be in a band, I'd probably be in jail right now. I'm just saying, I would hurt somebody.
Yeah. Well, what about you guys? You know, do you find, I mean, is there a therapeutic aspect with music for you guys? I mean, because you know, up until Galaxy was 15, you know, it was just something you were a consumer of.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now that you're a producer of that, are you finding yourself viewing it in any kind of different light?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. We went to a lot of shows together, and I think we both knew that that was, like, super important to be there for the making of it, even when we weren't making it ourselves. But going to shows was definitely an outlet. It was therapeutic, I would say, completely.
We used to go to so many shows.
Yeah.
30 or 40 a year, probably.
We get on a certain genre kick. Like, there's a summer that we went to all metal shows. Right. That's not even, our top genre at all. Right. But we're like, there's a bunch of good metal bands coming around. Let's go see all of them.
You sound like my wife and I did that before we opened this place. Every year, 30, 40 shows a year.
Yeah, and, I mean, we were, you know, voraciously consuming it.
Yeah.
And some of those first shows touched me so deeply that I was like, I go to a lot of shows because I actually said at one point, I was like, it's my weekly subscription. Me and Zach like to go to this Monday night jazz jam that's all local jazz musicians that get on stage and improvise together. And we would do Monday night jazz and Tuesday night that was an all improv funk night. And that was, it was at a time when I wasn't in therapy and I needed my Monday and Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And the people there, I don't play a brass instrument, I don't play piano, so I was not an asset in the performance sense. And I wouldn't dare actually get up and try to sing because there were jazz vocalists singing, and I didn't want to embarrass myself. But those people were so excited that someone was there just to consume because they were all... You know, they were all multi-instrumentalists in the building that they're like, oh, you're here just to watch us? And I was like, yeah. And they felt so good about it. And then I felt so good about it. And we still try to make Monday nights at Petra's, but it's super therapeutic. And I did theater before I did music. And once I realized that playing with the Fleas gave me that same feeling I got from performing theater, I was like, I have to perform in some capacity. Like, there's no... As an adult, I have to do it. Now that high school theater is ending, it is a necessity for me to be performing in some capacity. So, very therapeutic.
Yeah, in a similar way, I've been involved in education for my whole professional life and stepped out of the traditional classroom in 2012 to start coaching teachers. And right around that time... is when we started the Fleas, and I just realized I missed the performance aspect of the classroom. I mean, because every day, you know, I was on stage. Yeah. I didn't have a teacher-centered class, but I did have that performative aspect to my instruction. And
I have a feeling Mr. Lomberger would have been like the favorite.
That would have been a favorite. Great class. Yes. That was the one you pay attention to that you're passing? Yeah, that would have been that one.
That's all the time. You're Mr. Lomberger's daughter. He was my favorite teacher, and he taught me this, this, and this, and this. And yes, he was everybody's favorite teacher.
I needed that. You know, that.
You needed
to
perform.
I got that from the Fleas, and I get that from Yaller. And, you know, it is... Yaller is therapeutic in a way because we crank it up, and that's like we don't crank it past the point of comprehension, but you know, we are also, you know, it's nice to not play a sweet little instrument, you know, like the ukulele is just rainbows, and it's kind of fun to, you know, to play something.
You guys still managed to rock out a little bit though.
Absolutely.
And we're the one that drove. We would not be rocking out if we weren't in the band.
We definitely drive that. We have to hold ourselves back from making it too much that.
I was going to ask this earlier, and I guess I'll go ahead and ask it now. When you're writing, when you're cooking something up, do you ever sit down and specifically write for this project or that project, or do you write and it's like, this belongs here? Like, how does that work for all of you?
Yeah,
really?
Go ahead and you go first on that one.
We write all our songs pretty much together.
Yeah, okay. It's a totally different process.
Yeah, completely different than the way we write for the Fleas. With the Fleas, you bring a finished song to the group, you assign who does what, and then you play it all together.
Okay.
And with Y'aller, it might start with someone came up with a riff, someone came up with a first verse, and that might happen outside of practice, but the actual formation of the song pretty much exclusively happens in practice.
Right.
So you just build, you start with that building block and you build it together.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's interesting, like us finding our sound, because as we become more comfortable playing with each other, we'll just like improvise for 10 minutes sometimes during practice. And the way that sounds, you know, like where we naturally lean into is becoming more of our sound as a band. So songs like, I think everybody's favorite song right now is 502, probably. And that has a loud, almost hardcore beginning. And then it's got like a big, fat, improvised section in it. It's entirely different every single time we play it. It's like 6 minutes of improvised music. And it ebbs and flows and crazy things happen. And I love playing that part because I love exploring new things I can do with the guitar, and it's soloing, but it's not the kind of soloing I do with the Fleas, where I'm often playing fast runs and stuff. With y'all, I'm trying to sort of make these big walls of sound sometimes, and that song even has, when we perform it live, Galaxy, before the song or before we play, goes around to the audience and gets the audience to collectively write a poem. So she'll hand her phone to people and they add lines of poetry to her poem. And of course it's god-awful, which is the point.
Yeah. Yeah.
But everybody has a stake in it. And then when we perform that song in the improvised break, she reads the poem. So, and then everybody's listening for their line. Right. And
how innovative.
All right.
Yeah, what a great way to drum up audience participation.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
And you yeah. can be a part of their performance on Thursday, February the 8th,
right
here at the Rooster.
Come help me write a bad poem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever had one that, like, have you ever had a performance where you've done that and, like, it actually was good?
No.
Like, you're like,
No.
No. She handed it to me one time, and I wrote some banger lines.
There's some good lines.
There's some good lines, but not collectively.
No.
Okay. Someone, no, the next person, it was just
someone inevitably
awful.
Derails it.
Yes.
Wrongly.
Somebody was like, no, that's too good.
Yeah.
Cheese on a stick.
Right.
Yes, that's something that would happen.
Yeah. Like, here's a line about poop.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Right. But we are in the South.
Yeah, first time it went a real hard Shrek direction.
Oh, okay.
Like a whole stanza about Shrek. And then the most recent time, it was real dirty. It got real raunchy. And
it was real profound for a little bit, and then got just dumb and raunchy.
And then someone pulled it back around and somehow made the raunchy bit match the top. But it came back around, but right there in the middle, it got a little questionable.
There's
sure.
one in every crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just love
the
process.
One in every crowd. Yeah. This one.
No. No. We've done enough comedy shows for me to know, like, dirty's not the way to go with this.
No.
I we've done improv here, and we got another improv show coming up soon, but, like, a lot of people want to go straight to the dirty. It's it's way more fun to not do that.
Yeah.
If it's clever, you don't have to be dirty or offensive.
You can be silly without being dirty.
Yeah.
Yeah, and silly is fun. Like, you know, anyone that wonders, like, anyone that questions the success of guys like Adam Sandler don't understand just how awesome silly is. Because silly appeals to everybody.
Yeah.
Silly appeals to the kids, it appeals to the grown-ups, and it even appeals to the grandparents.
Yeah.
Like, silly is fun.
Yeah.
So what I do now professionally is travel around the state and train teachers. And this is part of my message.
Really?
Because what teachers want right now is they want to know how to engage their students, because they're seeing a lot of their students turn off or they're harder to pull into a lesson. Mm-hmm. And part of what I do is I model for them, you know, letting your silly side out a little bit, and that it's okay to show that you're having a good time, and you should be having a good time teaching because it's fun, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can make learning fun for a kid, you've changed their life. Like, yeah, you've made their life better.
Absolutely.
All of my favorite teachers growing up were the silly ones.
Were the lively ones. One of my favorite high school English teachers, he was 6'7", and if he saw somebody not paying attention, he would jump on top of his desk and start the lesson right from there.
Wow. Oh, I love that.
And all you would hear was, kvunk! And that got your attention, him landing on his desk.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I'm like, who wasn't paying attention? Now I'm looking around. Who's he looking at?
Yeah.
Wow. Awesome. Well, guys, let's wrap it up. Give our viewers, you know, tell them where to find you. Where, you know, if you want to plug any of your other projects, feel free to do that as well. And
let's plug projects and then talk about the y'all. You plug your stuff, Kim.
Okay. Yeah, I do solo singer-songwriter stuff. I don't know how soon this will be out, but I'm playing here on February 1st.
That's right.
I'm doing a round with my good friend Rick Spreitzer, and Jackson Harden is going to be our guest. And they're both amazing people and amazing writers.
And that'll be kind of like a storytelling session in a way, of sorts.
For sure.
And it's a free show,
February 1st. Yeah, free show. And like songs and stories. But I play around a good bit around, I try to keep it pretty close in. I have a lot going on, but I play around a good, you know, a couple times a month, usually just around here. But you can find, I mean, Kim Ware. I'm on Instagram and Facebook, and Kim Ware and the Good Graces is the kind of long time name of my musical project, my singer songwriter stuff. So yeah, you can find me all over the socials and stuff.
I'll plug for Zach because he's not here. Jazzy Zach, if you're looking for a session saxophone player, he is a freelance musician. He's on tour with Of Good Nature right now. He also plays with Ministry, spelled Men as Tree, out of Charlotte. They're kicking back up. They're playing a lot in Charlotte. They're trying to do every 2 months. So check them out. And Metaphonia out of Boone. Those are his kind of like original music projects. You want to plug, please?
So, Galaxy and I are the Dancing Fleas, America's premier ukulele band, and we have a show coming up here at the Rooster in April 6th, and we're probably going to play about 2 shows a month for the duration of 2024, looking to play more festivals and things like that this year. So, if you're looking for somebody to play your music festival, get in touch with the Dancing Fleas. We put on a super fun, high-energy family-friendly show that everyone loves. And Galaxy and I are also in a duet called Spaceport Floozies. And we have a show coming up at Gaston Poorhouse.
All right.
Can't remember the date, but yeah, we'll be playing at Gaston Poorhouse. We're looking for other opportunities, and we're coining it as soft music for punk rockers.
Yeah. And what about Yaller? What's coming up for Yaller?
We got lots of shows. We got 4 shows in February, but we're really pumped to be playing with the Ruftons right here on February 8th. You can find all of our upcoming stuff at Yaller on Facebook and Yaller with periods as the apostrophes on Instagram. It is a colloquial super contraction for you all are. So it's like you would think. It's like, y'all are pretty good. Y'all are a lot of fun. Y'all are going to buy a t-shirt.
Tell me that you're from the South without telling me you're from the South.
Right.
And y'all are from the South.
Right. It's my favorite thing because people love to say y'all re because it's R-E. And then they'll say like, what's y'all's band name? I can't. Is it y'all re? I don't know, but y'all are pretty good. And I'm like, you just said it. But yeah, that's us. You can find us on all the things. We got some stuff up on YouTube. And we have an album coming out in question mark time. It is called First Edition, and it is basically like our first 6 songs and a little bit of bonus content. And you'll be able to find that out sooner rather than later. And there might even be a little bit of hidden music tracks available on the 8th. So if you want a little bit of a sneak peek,
you're going to want to come on the 8th and get a little bit of a taste of our album before it
hidden
comes out.
Track. This is the 90s.
Yes. Wait, is yes. y'all Reese, y'all's Cajun Zydeco co-sister? Because that's what it sounds like.
Don't give us any other ideas. We don't need another band. I would like to learn to
play accordion.
Every
single time she
though.
Said it, I was like, that sounds so Cajun.
I love that, though. Because you'd spell it the same way, so it'd be all confused.
Yeah,
right? Y'all are playing tonight? No, y'all no, are y'all playing next week. Y'all Re is playing. It's like, wait, what?
Y'all Re will share.
Sorry. Reminds me of that old bit on like the... What was that? Animaniacs had that bit where they were at Woodstock and were like, who's playing? Who?
Oh,
who?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
God, I love Animaniacs.
That, but the South. The Southern version of that.
Well, oh, guys, thank you so much for coming in. We're back, baby. We took a break for the holidays, but we're back, and I couldn't be happier to have y'all as our first guests of the year on the show.
Me too.
Thanks so much for doing this. We can't wait for the show on the 8th, and we hope you'll be here. Thanks again. Peace and love.
See ya.